Welcome to the Idea Fit Pro Show with your host, Sandy Todd Webster.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Season 4, Episode 1 of the Idea Fit Pro Show. This is Sandy Webster, Ideas Editor-in-Chief, and your host for the podcast. It is super exciting to be back. We appreciate your patience during our team's summer hiatus, and we're ready to deliver some fantastic guests and insights starting today and each week through the end of 2022. To kick off this series of shows, today I'm talking with the newly minted 2022 Idea Personal Trainer of the Year, Dr. Rick Ritchie. Rick has been in the fitness industry since 2002 in various roles, including certified personal trainer, training manager, educator, orthopedic massage therapist, college and university professor, industry presenter, as well as subject matter expert and talent for fitness industry educational videos and written content. This man does it all. He's the host of the NASM CPT podcast with Rick Ritchie, and he is regularly called upon by media outlets for his expertise on fitness and wellness. His master's degree is in exercise science, and his doctorate of health science and exercise leadership is from the California University of Pennsylvania. If you're not familiar with Rick's teaching style, you're in for a treat today. He has a knack for simplifying complicated material through humor, personal experience, and great storytelling. Let's get right to the interview so you can experience his enthusiasm and impressive knowledge base on an array of fascinating topics. Dr. Rick Ritchie, welcome to the Idea Fit Pro Show.
I'm absolutely delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, for carving some time to chat. You know, just to set the table for listeners, I wanted to first congratulate you on being chosen by your peers as the 2022 Idea Personal Trainer of the Year.
And just a quick story
here. It was super fun for me to watch it all unfold at Idea World Convention just a few short weeks ago. I remember I was sitting in your type 2 diabetes session that morning at the event and thinking, in just an hour or so, this brilliant person is going to be on stage accepting his award.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that I am thrilled for you, as I am for all of the recipients every single year. This is so richly deserved. If you could walk us through some of the thoughts and feelings of getting this accolade just to get things started.
I have to say, well, I got nominated. That was really nice. Like somebody nominated me, and then I had to send in like an application process. And I was like, I don't know about this. I don't know. I feel like this maybe isn't like I train. I like training, right? And I try to influence trainers, but I didn't know that I'd really be a consideration. And so when I won, like I was very, very excited, but it's not just that I was excited. It's like a moment for personal trainers to shine. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I kept saying, even in my acceptance speech, was I love being a personal trainer. And I have a lot of hats that I wear. There are a lot of things that I do within the fitness industry, but chances are, if you were to come up to me and we started chatting and it came around to, hey, what do you do for a living? I would say I'm a personal trainer.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, especially knowing all of the study you've done and all of the different tools in your toolbox, the roles you've played for the last 20 years in the industry, to come back to that as your cornerstone, your touch point, I think is super special. And so, you know, since I've mentioned it and since I mentioned a few of the roles that you've done in the intro I did for you, for those who don't know your background in the industry that well, if you could give us a digest version of how you got started in 2002 and the path that led you to what you're doing today.
Yeah. So in 2002, I moved to New York in 2001. And I, as an actor, so many people that do that, I did one national tour and I went, I am done. I never want to do that again. So,
it was stage acting. Sorry to interrupt you. I didn't know this about you. Wow.
Yeah. So it was stage acting. So I did the tour and I was like, this is not what I want to do for a living. So a friend of mine that was on the tour, she said, I am getting a job as a personal trainer when I get back. So I'm not waiting tables or whatever. And I was like, that is the first job I ever said I wanted. So when I was young, I had a martial arts teacher who owned a studio and a gym, and he was a personal trainer and taught martial arts. And everybody wants to be like their martial arts teacher when they're young. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have a gym and a martial arts studio. And so anyway, the opportunity to be a personal trainer, I never crossed my mind. And so I started applying for those jobs. And like everybody out there probably who's ever applied for a job, like, I don't have a degree in that. So I just thought, I'm never going to get this job, but I'm going to keep trying. Uh-huh. And so there were a few places that gave me the thumbs down. They were like, nice try, little fella. So, but eventually I got a job at New York Sports Clubs at Lincoln Center area in the West Side of Manhattan. Oh, wow. And I was there for a few years and went into management, went into education. So I started teaching exercise science. When I started doing that and kind of helping new trainers learn the ropes about training, that's when I was like, all right, I think this is what I want to do. So I went back and I got my master's degree in exercise science. A few years later, I went back and got my license in massage therapy because I just found so many things that like foam rollers can't do that I wanted to be able to do.
Yep.
And in 2006, I started working with the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And so since working with them, I teach workshops, I'm subject matter expert, provide content. I've written chapters in several of their textbooks. And in 2015, I went back to school again, what I said I would never do, and got a doctorate in health science.
Wow. Amazing. I mean, what a great journey. And it's always neat to look back and see how the dots connect. I mean, totally makes sense when you're in current day and you look back and you're like, oh yeah, that's why that happened. And one thing leads to the next. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what comes next because you're clearly on a learning journey. And, you know, as someone who loves, amassing knowledge and just to keep that learning groove going.
Yeah. I think that's lifelong learning.
Super
hashtag
exciting.
Lifelong learning.
Yeah, that's right.
But I also think this is interesting, Zandi, is that when I've gone through a lot of this stuff to try to be, I don't know, maybe more than quote, just a personal trainer. And then after I've gone down all of this road from 2002, when I first started, February 2002, when I first started as a trainer, to now, and to go back to the point when somebody asks what I do, then I say I'm a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I want to do more. And at the end of the day, I do want to do personal training. I do more. And there are more things that are on my plate, but like, that's how I identify.
Yeah. And you're still training, what, about 20 clients per week or 20 sessions, I think is what
I
read.
20 sessions. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good load in addition to all of the other educating you're doing. Yeah. So you're super busy. And speaking of which, I'm just going to say, you know, you also do this great podcast, the NASM CPT podcast with Rick Ritchie. Podcaster to podcaster, I just want to say how much I enjoy the show. Number one,
you've
hosted, just to throw out some stats here, you've hosted 215 episodes as of yesterday. I checked it, I think.
How do you know more about it than I do?
you're like, 215, where did that come from?
But, yeah,
that's what it says on Apple Podcasts. And your topics span everything from like super sciencey topics to how to write a resume and other really practical career topics, you know, just like helping lift personal trainers and other fit pros out there. But also, you know, as a podcaster, to see how incredibly consistent you've been since the show started in July of 19, I think it was.
Wow.
With insider knowledge of how much work and prep it takes to stay consistent and keep producing really great quality material. I'm totally blown away at how easy
Sandy,
you
thank
make
you.
This look.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that.
I mean, you truly, you have a gift for teaching and it's clear that you really enjoy it. And in fact, there are several glowing listener comments that credit you with their success in actually passing their certification exams. And so I think that's got to be so gratifying. It's a real tribute to your dedication to teaching. So I'm finally getting to my question here.
Okay. All right.
So in the last two, I guess, going on 3 years that you've been doing this, how has the show evolved and how has your style evolved and where do you want to take the podcast next?
Yeah, that's a great question. So initially, Sandy, I wanted to be a resource for new trainers that were coming into NASM. So like, what are some of the NASM isms? And then I thought, well, that's nice, but what about the people who've been NASM trainers for 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 years that have all said like, what's in it for me? Like, mm-hmm. what do I get out of it? And it's really hard. Like once when you're new and you're young and you're starting out or new and starting out, because we find a lot of people that get into personal training are not necessarily young, but they're new to it. Then yeah, some study guides and things like that are really helpful. But at some point you run out of stuff for study guides and then you're just overwhelming people with content. So for me, I shifted from we did like a 12 session series that was a study guide for people in the new certified personal trainer. So that's what CPT stands for, the NASM CPT, Certified Personal Trainer Podcast. A study guide. But aside from that, like I want to give you information that's not in the book. I want to give you information about business as a business owner. What can I contribute to that? As from education, as an educator, what can I contribute to that? From leadership perspective, what can I help contribute to you in your life as a trainer, whether that's writing a resume or learning about how fitness and exercise and active lifestyles can actually help to mitigate many different pathologies. And that's not something that we tend to study within the fitness world, but we're like first line soldiers when it comes to that. So what are some of the things that are out there that I can help to provide? And I want to provide a spectrum of mm-hmm. things because trainers, I think a lot of times just want to know what's next. And so with a spectrum of content, then they get to choose and say, oh, I'd really love that episode. I'd like to go in that direction with my life, mm-hmm. with my career. And so it gives options to people to listen.
Yeah, I find your approach to be really fresh and just super real. You know, you tell great stories. You make it very relatable for your listeners, you know, drawing from your own experience or the experience of others in your life or colleagues. It's a great approach to topics that, you know, spanning the spectrum from science to career and business, and business being the Achilles heel of most trainers, why they leave the industry maybe eventually is that they're not great at business, but you make it really relatable and say, hey, I struggle with these things too. Here's what I found works for me. I really enjoy listening to it. And I was wondering if you have any favorite episodes you can point our listeners to. And if so, if you could describe what you really liked about the content or why you think it resonated with people.
So most of the time it's just me blathering on. So, but from time to time I have guests and sometimes like Sandy, you're probably like this too. Like I like to learn from people and sometimes I have guests on that just blow my mind. And so my favorite one was probably Dr. Allison Breaker, and she is a researcher with the U.S. Army. And the kind of research that they do and what she's focused on, it's like biohacking, like 5.0. It's taken you to a totally different level. So we talked about you know, mitochondria and telomeres and blue light and how that affects people. And then how, you know, and adenosine and how adenosine affects sleep. And we talked about sleep and the contributions of sleep. And I proposed questions that I just postulated. And she's like, actually, there is a research study about that. And I was like, whoa, you just reconfirmed my ideas with research you already knew about, because it's right there in the back pocket with her. I also loved having Jamie Tartar on, because she is a researcher, Dr. Jamie Tartar, a PhD researcher in neuroscience. And so they're both like neuroscience researchers, and it's just like next level egghead stuff for me to geek out on.
Yeah, it's a total geek out all around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott Cheatham, too. Scott Cheatham, who is a physical therapist that I've had on. He's like my Steve Martin. He's been on the show so many times, you think he's part of the cast. And so I like having Scott on. In fact, that reminds me, I'm going to reach out to him and have him back on again, because he's so smart and he's delightful, just charming. He's funny. And he always makes me laugh out loud in every episode.
Yeah, well, you're doing a great job on the pod, and I'll look forward
Thanks.
To I'm going to look those episodes up, in fact.
And yeah, thank you.
But anyway, I highly recommend it for all the listeners out there to tune in and see what Dr. Rick Ritchie is talking about.
In
prep for this interview, you mentioned that you've been doing some deeper study on a few topics that I'd love to dig into. The first of these is the danger of sedentary behaviors, even if you work out regularly. So what have you discovered about this, and what do fit pros need to know to help their clients or possibly even themselves to increase their movement quotient?
I like that movement quotient. I started focusing on this when I was writing a course, a type 2 diabetes fitness specialist course. And, you know, I'm going in and trying to identify what are some of the complications, what are the correlations, how do things connect with type 2 diabetes. And so I rabbit holed into sedentary behaviors, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. And the "you got to be kidding me" was the fact that you can do exercise and still be sedentary. Mm-hmm. And so if you do that 1 hour workout in the morning, and maybe you do it 2 to 3 times a week, right? So that's putting up pretty good numbers when we talk about doing the 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity a week. And yet we find that independent of so many factors, independent of whether or not you are obese. So if you control for obesity, then you can look at it and say, it's actually the people who are more sedentary, regardless of obesity status, that have more chronic disease. Mm-hmm. And so we're shaking our fingers, oh, obesity. And then I feel like we're fat blaming and obese blaming, and people get really upset about it. And they should, because that's really tears at people. And yet the stronger correlation to chronic disease is how much you sit on your backside or lie on your back, not how much fat you have on your body. Mm-hmm. But the inverse of that, like, you can be skinny and sedentary and you have heightened pathologies. You're going to get sicker more often, but more it's the chronic disease, heart disease, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, cancers that are all associated with sedentary behaviors. And then you link that back to, well, I work out 3 days a week. I do my high intensity exercise class. And though there are some really stellar benefits, if you control for the people who are still exercising, that are finding a way to sit down the other 23 hours in the day, they actually have increased propensity. So that's the ratio of how many people that you control for have the diseases versus don't have the disease. And the disease ratio is much higher in the people who exercise but are sedentary throughout the remainder part of the day. So with that being said, like, what's the takeaway here? And I think the biggest takeaway is get up and move. And the movement, Sandy, isn't, oh, you have to run again or you have to exercise again. It's not sitting down and not reclining. minimizing how much you sit and minimizing how much you recline. So even getting up and going to the bathroom, which is why I tell people to drink water. Sometimes, yes, I'm all about hydration, but I'm really about you getting up and going to the bathroom every half hour. So that gets you out of your office chair. It gets you moving. And it's just the little things. And I've learned through time that the little things, even though they add up, many people don't do them because they don't think it's enough. And the truth of the matter is, and I always say this, a little bit of something's better than a whole lot of nothing. And it's those little bit of somethings that add up exponentially more. The amount of movement that you do through the day is far more valuable than the amount of workout that you do for that 30 minutes or that full hour. Mm-hmm. And we look at caloric expenditure, how much goes to your basal metabolic rate, more than half, how much goes to exercise. If you do it every day, a fraction, how much goes to the amount of movement that you do throughout the rest of the day that's not exercise. And it is the significant part of your day. So the more just kind of getting up and moving, the better off you'll be.
Yeah, absolutely. From a personal standpoint, I'm going to say that when I, you know, from self-discovery and, you know, having gotten my first tracker probably 6 years ago and paying attention to the data, anyone who knows me knows, number one, that I do not miss my morning workout. I go religiously every morning. I love it. I love to train. I love everything about it. Love my group. As I started tracking, I discovered that that was the only movement I was getting all day, my 45 minutes to 1 hour in the morning. And the rest of it was pretty insignificant. And so I started, you know, parking halfway to the gym and walking to and from, or just building in new little things to do. But I mean, for me, I think having the data in front of me was really important for me to see. It was a reality check for me to say, hey, you're not doing anything the other, you know, 23 hours of the day. And so how do you think these tools or data or wearables, whatever, can prompt or help with behavior mod in ourselves or for coaching it in our clients? I mean, how can we better harness fit tech for these changes?
I think that's a great question. And for so many people I know, I have an Apple Watch, and every once in a while it tells me to stand up and I'm like, stop it already. Right. Like it could be annoying when it tells you to do things, but at the same time, it is a reminder. And I think that your fit tech is valuable. And a lot of these, I mean, a lot of the studies that we find are coming from fit tech to give us a better idea of what movement is like and the discrepancy between what we think and what we can actually provide empirical data for. And they're not the same thing. So we have this perception of self, and our perception of self is usually a bit more glossy than what the reality is. Mm-hmm. And so when we have a data tracker, then it gives us a better and maybe a truer insight. They're not 100% correct, but it like gives you a better idea of what's going on in your movement, your daily movement. And I think that's really important for us. And the data we've pulled from sedentary behaviors is the reason so many of these companies have emerged with standing desks and the desk treadmill and things like that. It's because of the data that we've pulled. So I'm happy to pull data. I think it can be very helpful, but it can also infringe on your peace of mind. So don't get too caught up in the data. Just, you know, you have your morning routine, just add in a few more routines. All right, here's my before lunch routine where I get up and I go do this and I walk the dog at this and I get like whatever it is, but have your little micro routines throughout the day, as well as, and while still keeping that nice big morning workout and social time that you have as well.
Great advice. Just keep it simple. Don't let the data overwhelm you, but do pay attention, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So another topic I know you've been devoting attention to these days is inflammation, acute and chronic, local and systemic, and this whole discussion about rice versus meat. And to be clear, we're not talking about plant-based versus animal protein diets.
That's right.
We say rice versus meat, but it's a great way to remember it, sort of. So I'm hoping you can elaborate on these two acronyms and what some of the research is saying about how exercise and other factors might play a role.
Yeah, it's great. So rice, you've probably heard of when you maybe roll your ankle or something to rest, ice, compress, and elevate. And so what that does is it minimizes inflammation, but it only minimizes your inflammation as long as you're icing and compressing and elevating. But as soon as you put your leg down, and as soon as it gets warm again, which it will, and as soon as you take compression off of it, it will start to swell and the inflammation will return. And we kind of need that inflammation. Inflammation is the means at which our body heals itself. Now, it can go rogue and it can lead to chronic inflammation. But what they've really found is that if we kind of focus less on rice and more on meat, which is movement, exercise. The next one, the A, is analgesics, which is just pain medicine. Like if it hurts, take something to make it not hurt so bad. And so you've got movement, exercise, analgesics, and then treatment or therapy. So to go to somebody that can give you very specific movements, very specific treatment for that. And I think what's great about this is that a fitness professional can fill two of those things, right? So we can assist with movement. We can assist with exercise. Mm-hmm. So whether or not you are have an education that supports how to help people move and exercise with a rolled ankle or a knee or something like that, that's a different story. But the fact of the matter is us moving through a range of motion. I'm rolling my wrist right now. So I have hurt my wrist. I'm going to go to a range of motion, but like as soon as it starts to hurt, and I'm not pushing through that range of motion to make it hurt more. Mm-hmm. I'm just working with the range of motion I have. So full available pain-free range of motion without any weird movements, any compensation, and just keep it moving because the movement of that, the activation of the muscles that brings in those fresh nutrients, it helps to flush out some of that, the swelling in the area. All of that's beneficial for us.
So with the study you've done, would you err more to the rice side or to the meat side?
Meat for sure. The only time I would say rice is if you take a bonk to the head and you don't want like a horn growing out of your forehead. And if you can get that down and hopefully it won't come back, then I would say do that. But aside from that, I'm not big on icing because it'll minimize inflammation at potentially the most important time for inflammation to show up, which is at the point of injury.
So interesting. And I was thinking this is a great example of how scientific evidence evolves and how we should remain open to layering on to past knowledge with new evidence. So I'm curious if you were to grade the fitness industry and our educators on whether we're honoring that type of learning philosophy, what kind of a grade would you give us, or, you know, how would you comment on that? And how can we all improve in this regard to keep advancing the knowledge base?
So just like there's still some debate out there between the rice and the meat, I think there's some debate here that we could go through with this because, I love evidence-based stuff. Like that's that when you go to school and especially, in graduate school and everything that you do, you can't write anything in a paper unless you have evidence to support it. And then you have to put the evidence down. You have to say, oh, it was this author, this study, this is the date, right? So you have to cite your sources, but that's only for the information that we know. And so we need people out there that are just like, I like training this way and it's really cool. And people catch on and they're like, I think that's cool. And you're kind of kicking against the pricks and doing things that are unusual. And I like doing this unusual thing. And that may have a lot of really cool benefits to it. So I love the evidence-based stuff, But I also love the innovation, because if all you did it was evidence, then you wouldn't be really that innovative. And you need the innovatives. You need the knees over toe guy. You need like the people who are just going, I don't know, this is not the normal way of thinking. And go out there and explore that, because right now we think, oh, that's dangerous. And then we start doing some studies on it, and maybe we find out it's not only potentially not dangerous, but beneficial. So it's a great avenue to explore. What do I think about it? I think that we are the most innovative industry or sector out there. And we're really good at being innovative. I'd like to strengthen and bolster the evidence-based stuff, but also without losing the innovation.
Well said. I think the innovation perpetuates or leads to evidence-based stuff.
It does.
We want to dig deeper into it, and this is working for a certain population of people, then hey, let's test that hypothesis and see if it holds water or what we come up with. And so
I think the bigger it gets, the more the researchers that, you know, because I mean, a lot of these researchers are at universities. And so their students, especially in the exercise science world, are going, what do you think about this? Hey, professor, what do you think about this? Right. And so they're getting these questions, and they get those questions semester after semester. Eventually, they're going to be like, forget it. All right, let's do some research. Okay. we're going to figure this out once and for all. So like, keep it coming. That's what I say.
Yeah. And don't throw out the baby with the bathwater kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So, Rick, the third topic you shared with me as a point of heightened interest for you these days is program design and exercise selection for movement prep and workouts. Give us your download on this and why you think it's important.
I think so many people just make it up. and you can go through almost any certification body out there, and they're going to talk about programming. And then as soon as you pass the test and you can go and train people, a lot of people are like, ah, great, forget that part. Now let's just do exercises. And so it's not necessarily following a program. It's not following a progressive means to get to a goal. It's just stuff. Like, I like this, and it gets the heart rate up. And you want to lose weight, so we're getting the heart rate up. But like, where's your system of progression? And then where do you cycle back through? And what do you revisit? And where was your focus? And what seemed to work in that moment? Like, when did they get the most results? Because if you can track that stuff, then you can go back and be like, hey, we got the most results with this. And so maybe we cycle back to where we got the most results. But if somebody said, hey, you know what we did a few weeks ago, I felt like I really got a lot more results. I got stronger, or maybe lost weight, or whatever they're looking to get. And the trainer is like, I don't know what we did. I just made stuff up. Or I'm hurt. Like, I'm really sore after that workout. And you're like, I don't have a clue what I did. So for me, I think it's important to make a plan. And so that's kind of your macro cycle. This is a long period of time. And sometimes I'll say a year, just so I start planting the seed. We're going to be working together for a long time. All right. So plan it for a year. And then I say, okay, well, here are the mesocycles, which are usually months. And here are the microcycles, which I'm like, this is what we're going to do this week. And so this is kind of a plan for the week. This is the plan for the month. This is the plan annually. So after several months, we might go through and switch out of one style of training. So whether it's stabilization endurance, and then we might go to strength endurance, and then we might focus hypertrophy, and then we might focus on max strength, then we might move into power, and then we might cycle back through, and then we might change our micro cycles to now we're going to do a little bit of stability, a little bit of strength on one day, a little bit of power on the other day. So we start this undulating program. But it's a program. It's considered. It is thought out, and it can lead to some really interesting results. But it also allows for a path to show you what those results were, if you're also doing your assessments, because you're not going to know if you got results unless you're assessing those things.
Right.
So I think that this is a valuable part of it. And then that moves into, how do I best train each individual? And that then goes into your assessments and how you then prep their body for movement.
Mm-hmm. So work on your assessment skills, number one. Number two, have a plan, develop a plan. Communicate with your client about how they're feeling, how it's working. Maybe record what's going on so you can look back and say, oh yeah, that's right, we did that, and that's why you were sore, or that's why you had strength gains. Mm-hmm. And stay on top of it. But it sounds like a lot of really good communication with the client is very necessary.
Yeah, it is. And I think another thing too is just, it doesn't mean you can't make some stuff up on the spot. I think that's part of the fun. Somebody comes in and I had this beautiful plan and now we can't do those things. So it's on the spot. Or I don't write out your program ahead of time, but I know what we did yesterday or the day before because I have it written down. So I can look at it and go, I know what the progression is, and I can do that in real time in our session. Mm-hmm. And write that stuff down. So it's not like you have to have everything planned out, but you have to be able to track it. So writing the information down is going to be very, very valuable. Mm-hmm. So that you can always find that step and then move to the next one.
And don't be afraid to innovate and have fun, right?
Oh yeah.
So in my conversations with Fit Pro colleagues out there, I've heard from a lot of owners and directors that they're having a tough time just finding young trainers, but finding trainers who really understand the art of assessment, and then connected to that, how to program accordingly for unique clients. What do you think is going on here, and how do you propose we strengthen these fundamentals and the way we teach them to Fit Pros?
Well, I think a part of it is a pathway for our trainers. So I think, we talked about attrition already in this program and why people leave the industry. And sometimes it's just because we don't have any direction. And so, I have to do the business stuff and I have to do this and I get into this job to sell. But then once you have a good base, so many trainers are like, what's next? What's my what's next? And we're always, and I think we should be, it's part of our growth, looking for what's next. And so the what's next could be those populations that are generally excluded from consideration. So they could be heart disease. They could be diabetes. They could be amputees, right? There are so many people out there that could use and benefit our services that are also concerned that it's not for them, and it mm-hmm. can be. It's just that we're not supporting that process. So do we have a means to say, hey, I know you're looking for something else. Can we guide you towards this education so that you can now work with a totally new population? I think that would be really helpful for our industry in general.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, Rick, I've taken up a ton of your time already, but before we sign off today, would you please let listeners know how they can get in touch with you, either your social handles, email, podcast, and then and I'll put all of that stuff in the show notes. And then if you would leave us with a parting thought that provides words of wisdom for finding longevity and success as a Fit Pro.
Sure. Thank you. So if you want to reach out to me, you can do so. I'm mostly active on Instagram. It's at dr.rickrichey. So RickRichey. Or you can email me at rick.richey@nasm.org. And I host the NASM CPT podcast. If you listen to this and you're like, not bad. Not bad. I'll give it another whirl, see what he's got to say. Then I would appreciate that. Now for words of wisdom, I kind of have two anchors of sayings. They're like my little maxims. So one that I've already said today is a little bit of something's better than a whole lot of nothing. And the other one is do what you can, not what you can't. And so there are a lot of people out there trying to do things that they can't do. It doesn't mean don't work up to it, but it's the same way when we have clients that say, hey, why aren't we doing that cool stuff? I'm like, well, you're not there yet. You need to work up to it, but we need to do what we can when it comes to our business. We need to do what we can when it comes to our social media and stop focusing on what we can't do, because the can't generally stops us from making any forward progress. Mm-hmm. So find what you can do and move towards that space, move into the cans, and then stop focusing on the can'ts, because our forward progress is through that momentum of movement. So even if it's not far, it's still movement.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rick Ritchie, and congratulations once again on being named IDEA 2022 Personal Trainer of the Year.
Thank you for having me.
Bravo. It's been awesome talking with you. Thank you. Well, that wraps our first episode of Season 4. If you like this interview with Dr. Rick Ritchie, please check out the 60-plus additional IdeaFit Pro Show interviews we have banked on IdeaFit.com and on most podcast platforms. Be sure to search IDEA's multitude of video courses for Dr. Ritchie's work, which includes a great one on habit change called Blame, Client Excuses for Not Exercising, and Solutions to Retrain Their Behaviors. And also a new one due for release around Black Friday from his 2022 IDEA World session called Inflammation, What It Is, How It Works, Why It Helps, and Why It Hurts. Both courses can be counted toward your continuing education credits, which IDEA Fit Plus members get unlimited access to as part of their membership plan. This is Sandy Webster signing off. I hope you have a wonderful week, and as ever, thank you for all you do to make the world a happier, healthier place. Please reach out to me or the content team at content@ideafit.com if we can help you with anything. The IDEA Fit Pro Show is part of the IDEA Fit Podcasting Network. Many thanks to our executive producer, Jordan Leeds, and our engineer and editor, Mike Hilding. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved, reproduction without permission is strictly prohibited.